Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, September 24th, 2020. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Workers Rescued at State Farm. Firefighters lift two workers from scaffold stuck 10 stories up. By Allison Petty. Bloomington. Firefighters rescued two workers who became trapped on scaffolding more than 150 feet above ground at State Farm corporate headquarters Wednesday morning. Normal Fire Department's technical rescue team, which is trained to navigate complicated rescues involving high angles and trenches, helped the workers to get inside a window on the 10th floor of the building at 1 State Farm Plaza. They're trained on how to bring themselves down and self-rescue techniques for the amount of work that they do on scaffolding, said Matt Sweeney, public information officer for the Normal Fire Department. But I think if you can avoid rappelling down 11 stories, that's always a good day for them. They were happy to be down inside the safety of the building. He estimated that the workers had been trapped somewhere between 150 and 200 feet above ground. Sweeney said the workers became trapped around 9:30 a.m. when the scaffolding that held them malfunctioned and would not move up or down. The workers, who were wearing harnesses and not in immediate danger, had been brought inside by 11:40 a.m. Ordinarily, in a situation like this, we would have them escorted by one of our people on a rope to the ground, and we would rappel basically down the entire side of the building, Sweeney said. Instead, firefighters were able to lower equipment to the workers, who were able to remove the window pane with assistance from State Farm maintenance employees. We had cell phone contact with the guys on the scaffolding, Sweeney said. They informed us they were doing okay, they were just a little anxious and wanted to get down. The Bloomington Fire Department had first responded to the scene, but Normal firefighters were brought in because of their technical expertise. Public Information Officer Eric Davison said, Normal firefighters typically handle more complicated rescues, while Bloomington's fire department has special training in dealing with hazardous materials. The next story is entitled, District 87 Plans for In-Person Learning, by Kelsey Watznauer. Bloomington. Bloomington District 87 elementary students will have the opportunity to return to in-person learning after second quarter begins, district officials announced Wednesday. Superintendent Barry Riley said at Wednesday's school board meeting that the district will be constantly evaluating during this process, but now the plan is to bring some special education students back to school starting October 5th. All faculty members will return to their classrooms on October 19th when second quarter begins, with students in pre-kindergarten to second grade returning October 26th. Riley said the administration recognizes the best environment for students learning is in the classroom with their teachers and peers, but parents will retain the option to keep their children at home for remote learning. Of about 2,700 parents surveyed, 76 reported their experience with remote learning was good or excellent. However, Assistant Superintendent Diane Wolf said many of those who reported they were struggling were the parents of younger elementary students. Students in 3rd through 5th grade will be able to return to in-person learning November 9th. Those who return will attend 2 days in-person per week. 1 day will be remote learning for all students, and 2 days will be asynchronous learning at home. All health safety guidelines will be upheld when students return, including masks and distancing, officials said. Riley said the district administration does not have a plan in place yet for junior high and high school students. In other business, the board voted to adopt the 2020-21 budget as presented in August. The tentative budget shows an estimated initial structural deficit of $3.4 million on the operating funds and a total $4.9 million deficit on a budget of $75.3 million for all funds. Colin Manahan, Chief Financial and Facilities Officer, said trends related to the COVID-19 pandemic resulted in some savings last year, and those trends could have some effect in this fiscal year as well. The same trends may be experienced during this school year, but this school year is a little bit different, he said. We have teachers back in the buildings. They're teaching synchronous and asynchronous learning from their classrooms. So with the buildings occupied, we have expenses. We're talking about bringing kids back slowly, so all those expenses will start to come back. District 87's revenues are down this year, including corporate personal property replacement tax revenue, which is down 25%. To help offset some expenses, the board also approved resolutions to transfer $600,000 from the Working Cash Fund to the Transportation Fund and $1.2 million from Working Cash to the Education Fund. A resolution to issue $15 million in Working Cash bonds also was approved as a way to restructure the district's long-term debt, Manahan said. The district expects no increase or very little increase in the overall tax rate to finance the bonds, Manahan said. And here's a story entitled, McLean County Adds 24 COVID Cases, Total at 3,199, by Allison Petty. Bloomington. The McLean County Health Department reported 24 new cases of COVID-19 on Wednesday, bringing the county's total since the start of the pandemic to 3,199 cases. Of the total, there are 230 people in home isolation. 12 people are hospitalized, with two of those in intensive care, and 2,937 people are considered recovered. The county has had 20 coronavirus-related deaths, the most recent reported Tuesday. The county's cumulative positivity rate, based on more than 68,400 tests conducted, is 4.7%. Its rolling 7-day positivity rate through Tuesday is 3.8%. There were 594 people tested Tuesday at the McLean County Fairgrounds community testing site operated by Reditus, according to the county's Emergency Management Agency. The site can handle testing about 800 people per day and is currently seeing about 600, the agency said. If you've been around someone that was positive, been in a large group, or just want peace of mind, head out to the Interstate Center and get tested, it said. Pre-registration is available online at testdirectly.com/McLean. Illinois State University reported Wednesday that there was one positive result from a total of 119 on-campus tests the previous day. In the past 7 days, the university has had 25 positive results of 737 tests performed, a 7-day positivity rate of 3.4%. While ISU COVID results are included in the McLean County totals, they are not necessarily reflected on the same day. The university's daily reports reflect information from Reditus Laboratories, which performs the on-campus testing. The county numbers come from the Illinois Department of Public Health and include results from tests performed at multiple locations. Statewide, public health officials reported 1,848 new cases of the virus among 46,391 test results reported over the previous 24 hours. The rolling 7-day average positivity rate in the state remained at 3.5% Wednesday for the fifth straight day. Illinois Department of Public Health also announced another 22 COVID-19 related deaths, pushing confirmed virus-related casualties to 8,508. Elsewhere in central Illinois, Tazewell County reported 49 more cases of COVID-19, bringing its total to 1,664. There are 446 people in home isolation, 14 hospitalized, and 1,181 who were considered recovered. That county has had 23 COVID-related deaths. LaSalle County reported 16 additional cases, bringing its total since the start of the pandemic to 1,650. Of those, 1,067 are considered recovered. Livingston County announced 3 additional cases, bringing its total to 368 since March. Of those, 40 are still considered active cases. And here is a related story entitled Pritzker, Positivity Rate Too High, by Jerry Nowicki. Springfield. While Illinois' rolling average COVID-19 positivity rates remain lower than surrounding states, Governor J.B. Pritzker said once again Wednesday it is still too high to resume a level of normalcy beyond mitigations currently in place. The rolling 7-day average positivity rate in the state remained at 3.5% Wednesday for the fifth straight day, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health, which reported another 1,848 new cases of the virus among 46,391 test results reported over the previous 24 hours. "I would love it if we could get below 2%. That would be terrific," Pritzker said. "We're not anywhere near that right now. And what has happened is that Illinois, even though we've got the best positivity rate among all of our neighboring states, it's still a concerning positivity rate." The governor, once again and unequivocally, he is listening to medical experts when it comes to allowing fall sports with a high risk of transmission. The expert recommendations are to not allow contact sports such as wrestling and football at this time. Sports such as football and volleyball have been tentatively rescheduled for the spring. As for schooling, the state has let local school districts decide the best methods for engaging students. "Our schools are a priority. We want to make sure that kids are back in school," Pritzker said. "There are many kids who are in hybrid programs, and many kids who are not at all in school, they're just in e-learning. And the further we can drive this positivity rate down, the more I'm looking forward to the idea that kids will be able to get back in school." Pritzker also noted that Region 1 of the state's reopening plan, which includes Rockford in Winnebago County and several surrounding counties in northwest Illinois, has seen its positivity rate rise to 7.5%. That's higher than Region 4, which includes the Metro East, which currently sits at 7.3%. If Region 1 sees the rate rise above 8% for 3 straight days, it would be in line for added mitigations, such as closing of bars and restaurants to indoor drinking and dining. Region 4 will have stricter mitigations removed if it falls below 6.5% for 3 straight days. Northern Illinois University announced earlier this month that it would limit in-person instruction until September 28th. At the time the university made that move, 120 students had tested positive, and the numbers have jumped by roughly 100 positive tests since. University President Lisa Freeman, in a letter earlier this month, attributed the vast majority of student cases to students living off campus or attending off-campus gatherings where masks were not worn and physical distancing was not respected. We are also aware that some students are not fully cooperating with health officials and following guidelines on reporting symptoms and potential exposure, Freeman wrote. These careless and unacceptable activities have led to a substantial increase in the overall positivity rate for DeKalb County and put our entire community at risk. If stricter rules are imposed in the Northwest region, it would become the third to see the state scale back its reopening efforts. The first was the Metro East region, where bar service and indoor dining are still closed, and the in-person gathering cap is lower than the rest of the state. Will and Kankakee counties also saw tougher rules after passing the state's positivity rate threshold, but were returned to the coronavirus restrictions in place across the rest of the state after the rate decreased to below 6.5% for 3 days in a row. Illinois Department of Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike cautioned people against becoming numb to the numbers and continued to urge people to wear masks, keep physical distance from others in public, and to get a flu shot. Here's an item entitled Utilities Delay Shutoffs. Ameren, Nicor among companies waiting to March 31st. By Raymond Troncoso. Springfield. Several state-regulated utilities have voluntarily extended a moratorium on disconnections into next year after requests from the Illinois Commerce Commission. In a Tuesday news release, the ICC announced that Nicor Gas and Liberty Utilities have agreed to halt shutoffs due to missed or late payments for all residential customers until March 31, 2021. Ameren Illinois, Aqua Illinois, Illinois American Water, Commonwealth Edison, People's Gas, North Shore Gas, and Utility Services of Illinois have agreed to delay disconnections to the same date for residential customers who qualify for low-income home energy assistance programs, or LIHEAP, and those financially impacted by COVID-19. MidAmerican has extended its moratorium on shutoffs for LIHEAP qualified residential customers until March 31st as well, and is considering other options, according to ICC. To qualify for LIHEAP, residential customers' combined household income for the 30 days prior to submitting an application must be at or below 200% of the federal poverty level for their family size. A spokesperson for the ICC said it is strongly encouraging all residential customers of the participating utilities to call their utility to check their eligibility. The LIHEAP application period runs from July of this year to June 30, 2021, or until funding set aside for the program is exhausted. According to the ICC release, residential customers who have been impacted financially by the COVID-19 pandemic and cannot pay their utility bill do not need to fill out any forms or provide paperwork to qualify for the moratorium. They just need to make the phone call and verbalize their situation to receive a delay on shutoffs if their state-regulated utility is participating in COVID-19-related moratoriums. This action will ensure a continuation of utility service. Deferred payment arrangements are also available for both residential and small business customers needing help managing their utility bill obligation during these difficult times, according to the release. The next story is headlined, "In Bloomington, Protesters Voice Frustration with Taylor Decision," by Annalisa Trofimuk. Bloomington. Residents gathered in downtown Bloomington and other cities across the country on Wednesday night to express frustration with a Kentucky grand jury's decision not to charge Louisville police officers with killing Breonna Taylor. "There is something wrong with America's system," said Chyna Miller, a 27-year-old Bloomington native who participated in the event. Demonstrators sang "Lean on Me" and spelled "Breonna" with candles placed on the ground near the McLean County Museum of History. Taylor, 26, was shot to death during a drug raid gone wrong on the night of March 13th. Calls for the arrest of the involved officers were among rallying cries in protests against systemic racism and police brutality across the country this summer. Prosecutors said that two officers who fired their weapons at her, officers Jonathan Mattingly and Miles Cosgrove, were justified in using force to protect themselves. The only charges brought by the grand jury were three counts of wanton endangerment against fired officer Brett Hankison for shooting into Taylor's neighbors' homes during the raid. The FBI is still investigating potential violations of federal law in the case. Taylor, an emergency medical worker, was shot multiple times by officers who entered her home on a no-knock warrant during a narcotics investigation. Her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, opened fire when police burst in, hitting Mattingly. Walker was charged with attempted murder of a police officer, but prosecutors later dropped the charge. Walker told police he heard knocking but didn't know who was coming into the home and fired in self-defense. The warrant used to search her home was connected to a suspect who did not live there, and no drugs were found inside. The use of no-knock warrants has since been banned by Louisville's Metro Council. Governor J.B. Pritzker and Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot on Wednesday condemned the grand jury's decision and called for protests to be peaceful. The governor said the National Guard was at the ready, but the state wouldn't activate soldiers until they are needed. "This is, to put it simply, a gross miscarriage of justice," Pritzker said, adding that the circumstances around Taylor's death bring an overwhelming sense of rage, of passion, of sorrow to so many. In Bloomington, more than 24 people had gathered downtown by 6:30 p.m. Most wore face coverings, and many carried signs with messages such as "Black Lives Matter," "Justice for Breonna," "Fight Police Violence," and "If All Lives Matter, We Wouldn't Have to Protest." "I'm hurt and I am angry," said Miller, who held a sign that said, "Legalize being black. I feel like America was told that Breonna's life doesn't matter. Black lives don't matter. My life doesn't matter." She said change is needed both across the country and in McLean County. Having lived in Bloomington since she was a toddler, Miller said she grew up with an understanding that she should avoid some areas of town after a certain time of night due to a fear that she would be pulled over because she is black. My friends and family have been mistreated just for being black in this town, she said. Ward 6 Alderwoman Jean Carrillo, who also attended, said she hates having to gather with the community to mourn injustice. Carrillo said police reform in Bloomington shouldn't differ much from cities across the United States. We have evidence that black people in our community are more likely to be stopped, more likely to be searched, more likely to be canine sniffed, more likely to have force used against them, said Carrillo, adding that officials need to take a serious look at reform. Carrillo has been among local advocates for reallocating some resources from police departments toward resources to address mental health and social issues. Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron announced Wednesday that Hankison would be indicted on 3 charges of wanton endangerment for shooting 10 rounds into an apartment neighboring Taylor's that was occupied by 3 people. Hankison was dismissed in June. The indictment does not mention Taylor or her death. Cameron said the FBI is still investigating whether officers violated Taylor's civil rights. The Taylor family's lawyer, Ben Crump, denounced the decision as outrageous and offensive, and protesters shouting, "No justice, no peace," began marching through the streets. Some sat quietly and wept. Along with the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota, Taylor's case became a major touchstone for the nationwide protests that have gripped the nation since May, drawing attention to entrenched racism and demanding police reform. Taylor's image has been painted on streets, emblazoned on protest signs, and silkscreened on T-shirts worn by celebrities. The charges drew immediate sadness, frustration, and anger that the grand jury did not go further. The wanton endangerment charges each carry a sentence of up to 5 years. Illinois Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton on Wednesday noted that Taylor was the same age as her own daughter. Today, justice was denied. Brianna was shot to death in her own home. Her life was taken, a life of value and promise, she said. Anticipating public protest and large gatherings in the aftermath of the announcement, Lightfoot called for peace. I know that many, upon hearing of this verdict, will feel confusion and anger and disbelief, and many of you will want to express yourselves, Lightfoot said. I want you to know that I support you and will do everything in my power to protect you as you voice your righteous anger. Lawmakers across the state expressed indignation at the lack of charges for Taylor's death in statements and over social media. The fact that none of the officers was charged directly for Brianna's death makes it clear that our justice system does not equally value black life, and that has to change, said State Senator L.G. Sims, Democrat of Chicago, in a release. Brianna Taylor should be alive right now. We keep seeing the same stories over and over again, State Senator Robert Peters, Democrat of Chicago, wrote in another. It is exhausting and upsetting. 2020 has shown just how flawed our institutions are within a system stacked against us. Do not let anyone shut down the fight for a better world. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for September 24th. Please stay tuned.